Did you know that people who have lost their teeth may be at greater risk of cancer and heart disease? That's right. A study published in the Journal of the American Dental Association shows that people with full or partial dentures may eat fewer fruits and vegetables, the foods that protect us against disease. Researchers and dentists suspect that people who wear dentures may find it easier to eat processed foods. That means foods that are high in cholesterol and saturated fats. If you wear dentures, remember that you'll still need regular dental checkups to maintain healthy gums and overall good health. Don't forget to maintain a balanced diet. Practicing a good nutritional diet may take some time and discipline, but the benefits are great in adding years to a lifetime of good overall health. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. To find out more about your dental health, visit ADA online at ada.org.
Okay, sorry for all the confusion around here. That's an awful lot of it, because things are not exactly where they're supposed to be, but close enough. It's 6 o'clock, and that means it's time once again for another exciting edition of, if I can hit the right buttons in time, Off the Wall. I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. This happens occasionally. Actually, it happens a lot where things just get totally disorganized and frantic at the beginning of the show. Not helped by Amy Goodman ending 2 minutes early, which well, I was still trying to figure out why the delay machine wasn't working. But it's working now, I think. Isn't it working now? Yes, it is. So everything should be cool. We should be able to take phone calls, and I hope to hear from a lot of people tonight. I gotta tell you though, you know, there are all these things. Today everything sort of happened at the same time. Usually I have to do what is known in radio terms as a patch around. Actually, I'm not sure that's the right term, but you have to use patch cords to get around things that aren't working. And today was the day where there were more things not working than there were patch cords to get around them. What I have to do, and I don't want to bore people with the details, but basically, in order for me to have the music below me in the same time zone that I'm speaking in, that is not 7 seconds later where I have no control and I can't say, hey, I'm going to turn down the music, right? now. You see, I can do that because I'm speaking on the same time zone as the music. But if the music is coming up in a different area, like it's coming out live and I'm coming to you 7 seconds later, I can't do that. Well, the problem is I can't switch the music into the same time zone. And I know time zone isn't the right word to use. We can call it program and audition. I can't switch into audition because the little knob is broken on both turntable knobs. No, it's not a knob, it's a switch. The switch is broken on the knob. So I can't switch it, so I have to patch to a different channel that does have a working switch and two turntables, two patch cords, and then the delay machine's not coming up in the right place, so it's another patch cord, and we don't. Sometimes the patch cords don't work, you know? So all this has to be figured out. I know, I should get here like an hour early just to get everything working properly, I know. But we're having sort of like a flash flood outside right now, so it's a little difficult getting around. Biblical weather, I love biblical weather. It's monsooning. Fort Jefferson Village is completely flooded right now. It's awesome. Driving around, you wonder if you're going to get through these lakes that have appeared. Rivers going down the hills. I love dramatic weather. I know it's a pain for most people because it interferes with their humdrum, mundane way of life. But I happen to like things that interfere with that. Don't know what that says about me. There are exceptions, though. There are exceptions. And that's when things become so catastrophic that everything is completely either destroyed or messed up to the degree that you kind of lose everything. You lose sight of where you're going. And of course, I'm talking about the one-year anniversary of Katrina, which happens to be today. And I remember where I was a year ago. I was just arriving in Japan for the first time in my life. And I'd been completely cut off. I was on a ferry from Shanghai to Osaka. It's a boat ride of about 2.5 days. And when you're in the middle of the water, there is no media. There is no they have plenty of taped entertainment to show you on various video screens, which, you know, I guess is okay. But you have no idea what's going on in the world. So by the time I got to Osaka, that's when I was on Off the Hook live as the boat was docking, and that's when I first heard of the complete devastation that had taken place in New Orleans, how the entire city was underwater. Now, mind you, I had known that the storm was coming as I was leaving Shanghai a couple of days earlier, which apparently is more than a lot of people in charge here seem to know. And I remember when I finally got to a place in Osaka where I could record this show off the wall onto the Ai River, I was just in a state. I think it was probably the angriest show I've ever done because I was reading the newspaper. I was walking around Osaka, reading English language newspapers, and just trying to take in what I was seeing in front of me, and how it seemed like I was reading about some third world nation someplace that had no infrastructure whatsoever, no plan, and the what seemed like thousands and thousands of people who were swept away or victimized in other ways. And there I was over in Japan with absolutely no way of really knowing what was going on. And it was just so frustrating and annoying and enraging. And, you know, those feelings have not gone away. Those feelings have not gone away. The thing is, in hindsight, looking back, with a plan, with a decent infrastructure, with a system that cared, so much of this, so much of the misery, the horror would not have happened. And yeah, I wouldn't have to put the big asterisk next to my statement that says I love biblical weather, because you know what? I do like hurricanes. I enjoy watching them. I enjoy seeing what they do, but I don't enjoy that. I don't enjoy seeing thousands of people completely displaced and homeless for over a year now. I mean, is that unbelievable that there still doesn't seem to be a plan? People are still waiting for trailers, or as we heard in the past hour, there are people who have trailers that don't want them anymore, that have homes, and they have to wait for the trailers to be moved to the people who need them. It's a joke. It's unbelievable. I mean, it would be hilarious if it wasn't so tragic. Now, I have to, I don't usually do this, but I have to advise people to do something tonight that I think is extremely important. So please listen. It's important. Hopefully you're listening to the program before tonight is over, tonight being Tuesday, August 29th. Right? Yes. There is a documentary on tonight. Actually, it's a repeat from something that was on last week. It's the Spike Lee documentary, When the Levees Broke. It is the most incredible documentary I have ever seen. And I've seen quite a few. And I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. Documentaries are dull and boring and monotonous. I know. I made one. I know. Okay? They can be. This is not. This is the most stirring piece of something that actually happened that I think I've ever seen. And a lot of us, you know, we haven't thought about Katrina in months. We just assume everything is back, going back to normal. And it's not. It obviously has not happened. But what you will see in this documentary, it's 4 hours long, so, you know, you might want to break it up into bits. I did. But it's possible if you really get into the spirit that you can sit through the whole thing. But what you will see is just how it all unfolded, how people were basically left to die, and how very little, if anything, has been done since. And the thinking behind that, and the reaction to that. In a completely uncensored really fascinating way. Just to see the people down there who have so much spirit and so much passion and so much of a zest for living. I think this is something that should be shown in every schoolroom. Of course, you know, I'm surprised it's being shown on television at all, because the anger there, the anger directed towards especially the federal government for not doing anything for so long, it's dangerous. It really is, this kind of anger directed towards a particular target. And to actually see something like that broadcast, not actually over the air, but on HBO, division of Time Warner, it surprised me. It really did. I mean, this kind of thing should be on all the time because people are so angry and affected by various things that have happened to them, but none so dramatically as the whole Katrina situation. And I should also point out, the majority of people did not die from Katrina, per se, from the hurricane. The hurricane actually missed New Orleans. I'm not sure many people realize that. The hurricane did not hit New Orleans. What people died from, what people continue to be victimized from, was the failure of the levees. When they broke, the city was flooded, and people were swept away. Neighborhoods were destroyed, and it continues to this day. I would be very honored and thrilled in a different kind of a way, I guess, if we heard from people from that area tonight, if you call us later on around the half-hour mark, 631-632-9872. If anyone in New Orleans or the Gulf region is listening, I'd sure like to hear your perspective on these things. It's simply incredible. But seriously, if you have to break into a house with HBO tonight in order to be able to see this documentary, consider it. I'm not going to say do it. I'm going to say consider it. Do what you have to do. Subscribe to HBO for the night and then cancel. I don't know. Climb up on your telephone pole and plug it in. No, don't do that. You might get electrocuted. But do what you have to do. Get on the peer-to-peer networks. Download it. Whatever. See this thing. When the Levees Broke, it's. I think it's Spike Lee's best film, and he's not a documentary maker. He is now, but, wow, unbelievable. It starts, I think, at 8 o'clock, runs 4 hours, and like I said, you might want to break that up. I was wandering around the Internet, as I tend to do, reading various comments, both about the film and about events in general, particularly this one. And just seeing what various people have said about about their neighborhoods, people who have lived in the New Orleans area. Here's one comment that I found on the IMDb message board, which can be kind of interesting. I've since relocated 300 miles north of New Orleans. It's a year later, and people still ask me, so, like, are things still all messed up down there? Or worse, they ask, so, is everything back to normal? No, they're not. My neighborhood grocery store, which withstood the last hurricane 30-plus years ago, is now a concrete slab. I haven't been back since last August, but some of my neighbors have, and they showed me videotape. I almost had to stop watching halfway through because everything was gone. I was fortunate enough to get most of my stuff out and leave the city, but even if I wanted to go back, there's nothing to go back to. I mean, Spike Lee showed the Walmart I had gone to a week before the hurricane in his film. It was flooded. It was looted. After I evacuated, I sat in front of the TV and watched hours of video showing the destruction of dozens of my favorite places. The place I lived for 2 years beats me. I haven't been back. I know it flooded, but that's it. Frankly, I don't really want to think about it too much, but I can't stop. Yet to the rest of the nation, the hurricane is over. It happened, and it's over. End of story. For a lot of people, though, it's not. This film, with its faults, nevertheless displays this bald fact. And another comment here. I just returned home from New Orleans, and I'm looking forward to seeing this film. I wish everyone could go to the city and see what I saw this weekend. Miles and miles of nothing. Neighborhoods completely wiped away. Still a year later, no people, no cars, no open businesses, no rebuilding, nothing. If nothing else, I hope this film keeps the devastation on people's minds. It needs to be on our minds. We need to get mad. We need to be sad. We need to talk about what happened and what didn't happen. And most importantly, we need to act. Well, I think that sums it up pretty accurately. You will feel mad. You will feel sad. I don't think anything has ever made me as sad as seeing this this film. And I think it's important at certain times for these emotions to manifest themselves. And wow, if anything ever pointed out how people are really treated in our current culture, it's this. Just to be left outside, to fend for yourself, to survive for days without any sort of help whatsoever. You know, Hezbollah takes better care of their people. They do. If you saw what happened after that stupid war ended a couple of weeks ago with Israel and Hezbollah, they were handing out money to the people whose homes were destroyed the day they got back. Handing them cash. It was unbelievable. American cash, too, by the way. And here people are still waiting to get something. Insurance companies refusing to pay anything. Oh, we don't cover flood damage. Can you imagine? Why is it insurance companies are able to get away with this kind of nonsense where they don't cover the one thing that is likely to happen? But, you know, something I thought interesting, something I learned from the film, which basically was one of the focal points was how the levees were never built properly in the first place. They couldn't even withstand a Category 1 storm, let alone a Category 5. That made the devastation, that made the horror that happened to these people not an act of God, but man-made negligence. So I wonder how many insurance policies were written in a way so that acts of God were not covered. But this is pure human negligence. So if you have a policy like that, then I think that's one way for you to get what you deserve. Meanwhile, this is something interesting that happened in the last couple of days, and thank God for things like this. A man who pulled a hoax on Louisiana officials and 1,000 contractors by presenting himself as a federal housing official said yesterday he intended to focus attention on a lack of affordable housing. We basically go around impersonating bad institutes or institutes doing very bad things, said the man who identified himself as Andy Bickbaum, a 42-year-old former college teacher of video and media arts who lives in New York and Paris. And that institute would be HUD. At this moment, they're doing some really bad things. Masquerading as Renee Oswin, an official at the Department of Housing and Urban Development, Birkebaum followed Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco and New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin to the lectern Monday morning, and in a speech to attendees of the Gulf Coast Reconstruction and Hurricane Preparedness Summit, he laid out grandiose plans for HUD to reverse course. After the speaker read from a text he said had been prepared by his boss, HUD Secretary Alfonso Jackson, a HUD spokesman said the department knew nothing about the man. Everything is going to change about the way we work, and the change is going to start here today in New Orleans, the man said during his speech. Jackson, he said, had to cancel his appearance at the meeting of 1,000 builders and contractors at the Pontchartrain Center in Kenner because he had to stay in Washington to meet with President Bush. William Lurie, president of meeting sponsor Equity International, said he was duped. We were contacted about a week ago or so by someone who we believe to be public relations from Hill and Knowlton, saying they were representing the HUD secretary and that he wanted to make a major announcement at this summit. Lurie said he was told a few minutes before he had planned to introduce Jackson that the secretary would be replaced by this guy. We've done 75 national conferences, 25,000 people participated, and we certainly never encountered anything like this before. The man left a flyer bearing a housing and urban development emblem that said attendees could go to a ribbon-cutting ceremony at a public housing project. A free lunch and transportation aboard buses were promised. They never materialized. Kind of ironic, don't you think? Those buses never materialized, and the buses that were promised to the evacuees in New Orleans never materialized as well. Anyway, I just think this is great. Of course, the people in government think this is horrible. They think this is in very bad taste. What's some of the comments? Well, there's a bunch of comments. But the people who seem to like this, such as Annie Chen, media coordinator for Survivors Village, a tent city protest for the reopening of public housing in New Orleans, applauded the theatrics. Right now, a lie is better than the truth. So, yeah, sometimes you need to do something like that to get attention. Of course, this is part of the Yes Men. If you've never seen the Yes Men movie, that's another one to see. It's another one to get out and rent, get on DVD or whatever. These are guys who go around impersonating people, most times getting away with it, managing to find their way into conferences and public appearances and say things like the World Trade Organization is going to discontinue operations because, well, we're just doing it all wrong. And having people in the audience actually applaud, say, you know what, that was a courageous thing to do, and it was the right thing to do. And in the end, of course, it turns out to be a hoax, and the people they're targeting wind up looking even worse because they just continue with their bad policy. And then have the nerve to say these people are in bad taste. Unreal. So, yeah, there's some good to come out of that. Okay, again, like I said, I'd like to take phone calls from people in the area, just people who want to talk about what happened in the Gulf a year ago and what's been happening in the year since. But There's all kinds of other things going on in the world as well, which I guess we should pay some attention to. Let's see, opposition to the Iraq war is at an all-time high. That's great. That's wonderful. But how does it translate to action? How does it translate to anything actually changing? 35% of 1,033 adults polled said they favor the war in Iraq. 61% say they oppose it. That's great, but again, the war continues. I'm using the wrong word again. The occupation continues at great expense to us, and certainly great expense to the Iraqi people as they are driven closer to civil war. Question is, what happens next, and how do we get there? Let's see. We have some rather absurd stories, too, such as a British television channel stubbing out smoking from classic children's cartoons after a viewer complained about episodes of Tom and Jerry. I kid you not. Children's channel Boomerang, which I believe is an American channel, by the way, at least part of Cartoon Network, said on last Tuesday it had cut scenes from two episodes of the violent cat and mouse cartoon where smoking could be deemed to be glamorized. Yeah. I can't make this up. We have now pledged to view Boomerang's entire library of favorite cartoons and remove all other references that could be seen as glamorizing smoking in all our shows. I swear, you know, when I saw this, I thought, this has to be April Fool's. It has to be. Here they are, they're showing a cartoon where basically there's all this violence. I keep thinking Itchy and Scratchy. I know it's not that. It's Tom and Jerry, but it was kind of based on this. And there's a lot of violent things happening. These cats and mice are getting hurt a lot. People falling off cliffs, dynamite going off. But they're concerned about glamorizing smoking. Come on. Has anybody in their right mind ever watched a cartoon and seen Bugs Bunny light up and say, yeah, that's me, I want to do that? I mean, I never wanted to eat a carrot, so I don't know. This seems to be really absurd, stupid. But that's England. Yeah, it's happening over there, too. Meanwhile, in Sweden, Sweden's state broadcaster SVT last week faced ridicule for mistakenly showing a porn movie in the background of a news broadcast over the weekend. Viewers of a five-minute news update at midnight could see explicit scenes from a Czech porn movie on a TV screen behind news anchor Peter Dahlgren. The monitor, one of many on the wall of a control room visible behind the studio, normally shows other news channels during broadcast, but staffers who earlier in the evening had watched a sports event on cable channel Canal Plus, which often shows X-rated films after midnight, had forgotten to switch it back. This is highly embarrassing and unfortunate, said the news director. It must not happen again. A producer quickly spotted the sex scenes and ran into the control room and turned off the monitor. He said there were no complaints from viewers about the mishap, but enormous interest from media. But, you know, that's the difference. In Sweden, the guy says this must not happen again, and that's the end of it. The authorities have not marched in and imposed fines and sanctions and various other things. They're adults. They can deal with it. They handled it. End of story. And over to China. Now, you really can't make these things up. The headline reads, Dog's Driving Lesson Ends in Crash. I guess I should just read that and stop, because it pretty much tells the story. But, you know, the story has to kind of begin like this. You can teach a dog new tricks, but driving isn't one of them. A woman in Hohhot, the capital of North China's Inner Mongolia region, crashed her car while giving her dog a driving lesson. That's according to the official news agency. No injuries were reported, although the vehicles involved were slightly damaged. The woman, identified only by her surname, Li, shouldn't be hard to track her down, said her dog was fond of crouching on the steering wheel and often watched her drive. I bet the dog doesn't want to get anywhere near the car now. She thought she would let the dog have a try while she operated the accelerator and brake. They did not make it far before crashing into an oncoming car. What did we learn? Dogs cannot steer cars. I imagine there are people who needed to learn that lesson. Well, here it is. The news agency did not say what kind of dog or what kind of vehicles were involved, but Lee paid for the repairs. And, you know, that's another thing. I guess that's the end of it. She paid for the repairs, except for a stupid story that's being passed around the world. That's the end of it. In America, there'd be decades of lawsuits and court testimony and things like that. Yeah, it's a stupid thing to do, but, you know, we kind of write the book on stupid things to do. Like this one, for instance. This is another tragedy that happened in Kentucky. The plane crash had happened over the weekend, which, by the way, was the deadliest plane crash since 2001. Not 9/11, but the month after that. Remember the flight in Queens that plummeted to the ground? So it's 5 years without a deadly crash of this sort, which I guess is okay. You know, that's somewhat heartening that we're not crashing planes all the time. But this one really could have been avoided. Comair Flight 5191 sped down the runway before dawn on Sunday. The pilots commented that the runway lights were off, but continued with their takeoff. And they were going down the wrong runway. Yeah, they were going down a runway that only had 3,500 feet. They needed 7,000. How smart do you have to be? I'm not saying the pilot necessarily was the one completely at fault here, although certainly you shouldn't be speeding down an unlit runway. But come on, people, you have runways. And the only indication that you're going down the wrong runway is if somebody tells you, or if there's maybe a little tiny sign or something like that. Why not paint the damn things? Paint them so that you know, hey, I'm on the short runway now because it's red. And I should be on the blue one because I've got a big plane here. It just seems so easy to avoid this kind of a thing. We tend to know when we're on the wrong side of the road because, well, of course, there's all the people beeping at us, but it's obvious from the signs and from the fact that we're on the wrong side and various other issues. When I'm on an airplane and I'm taking off, I have no idea how these people know where they're going. They just seem to steer down random huge roads and take off, and I just hope they know what they're doing. Apparently not. Apparently there's a whole language there that even they don't understand. So it needs to be simplified and made extremely obvious when you're doing something that is wrong on a runway. It really can't be more important than that. Okay, yeah, you know, the story came out. The guy didn't kill JonBenet. What did we all say the first day this thing happened in Thailand? This guy's a nutcase. You can tell. It's so obvious. But apparently, in Colorado, it takes longer for them to figure these things out. They take the guy all the way back from Thailand and then find out that the DNA doesn't match. Oh, boy, we made a big mistake. We dredged up this case after 10 years, subjected everybody to the JonBenet videos all over again. And guess what? We're back to square one. But hey, we got this guy who had child porn in California, so at least we're going to have him face justice there. Oh, brilliant. Really nice. Who's surprised by this? The media loved it. They were able to fill an entire week with JonBenet stories. Maybe even more than that. Was it 2 weeks? And ignore the rest of the world. Ignore the important things that are happening. What else is going on? By the way, we can take phone calls 631-632-9872, 631-632-WUSB. Feel free to call in with your observations about the year since Katrina, the response and non-response, and all sorts of other things going on. Pornographic movies now seem nearly as pervasive in American hotel rooms as tiny shampoo bottles, and the lodging industry shows little concern as conservative activists rev up a protest campaign aimed at triggering a federal crackdown. That's right. This is the newest target. A coalition of 13 conservative groups, including the Family Research Council and Concerned Women for America, took out full-page ads in some editions of USA Today earlier this month, urging the Justice Department and the FBI to investigate whether some of the pay-per-view movies widely available in hotels violate federal and state obscenity laws. The coalition also was trying to draw attention to CleanHotels.com, a directory of hotels and motels nationwide that pledged to exclude adult offerings from their in-room entertainment service. Though porn is now cheaply and readily available on the Internet and through many other outlets, the activists chose to target the hotel industry in part because of the well-known brands of corporations that cater to family vacationers as well as business travelers. These are places that you take your family. These are respectable institutions, said Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council. Anything that brings porn into the mainstream is a concern. It just desensitizes people. You know, Tony, these are people who are paying for it. These are people who have opted to see it. And who are you to stick your big nose in and tell them, oh, you're not allowed to do this because we've deemed this a family-only area, regardless of what other people may feel. I don't see porn being forced on people. I've never been in a hotel where hardcore pornography is available for free to anybody who turns on the TV set. I've never seen that. I haven't spent a whole lot of time looking, but I'm pretty sure that's not available anywhere. You got to pay for it. So what is the problem here? Are you going to go after satellite broadcasters next? Actually, they have already gone after them, haven't they? Regardless of what you feel about pornography, it's something that is easily avoided if you're not into that kind of thing, and something that really we should be spending better time talking about better things, you know? I think it's a waste. Okay, I see one call coming in, and I want to thank that person for calling, but my rule is that we get at least two. That way we can go to another person afterwards. 631-632-9872. Hundreds of people jeered and taunted a group of neo-Nazis who rallied against immigration policy and the Iraq War on Saturday on the steps of Madison, Wisconsin State Capitol. Isn't that great when the neo-Nazis are agreeing with you about the war? Yeah, we got to stop the war. And again, I know I'm saying war and I should be saying occupation, but I'm just going to say it because it's quicker. Police estimated about 800 people showed up to counter the Minneapolis-based National Socialist Movement speakers, but a rainstorm thinned the crowd. 64 neo-Nazis lined the Capitol steps. Officers closed off streets around the Capitol and built three fences to keep the crowd dozens of yards from the neo-Nazis. 300 cops, many in riot gear, stood outside the Capitol. So you had three groups of people here. You had the 64 neo-Nazis, you had 300 cops, and you had 800 people protesting against the neo-Nazis. It's kind of crazy. Neo-Nazi speakers demanded Bush pull troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan. Okay. Pull troops out of Iraq and Afghanistan, but it continues. And place them on the Mexican borders with orders to shoot to kill. Yeah, that's where they diverge and go into loony land. They also denounced corporations for destroying the planet. Really? Of course, they don't go into details to how they're doing that. Several punctuated their speeches with shouts of white power, Sieg Heil, the usual. Yeah, it's carnival time, I guess, in Wisconsin. All right, 631-632-9872. Let's see who's out there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
Hi, how you doing? Oh, great. This isn't working either. Hold on. I got to press this button. Are you there? Oh, did I lose the call now? I don't believe this. This place is a disaster. Please, someone come in here and bail us out. Every single thing that could possibly be broken is broken, and every week I got to complain about it. I'm sorry. We touched the phone, and all the connections were lost. I don't know if we can get... No, we have no phone now. There is no phone at all. I'm not quite sure why this is. Okay, there we go. Now we have to see if there's... Okay. But, you know, it's not coming over the board again. And now I lost the phone. This is insane. This is totally insane. Okay, I apologize. This is insane way this place is kept up, but do we have audio? I tested this before the show, too. That's what's really annoying me about this. There's no way to get this right if it works and then doesn't work. Okay, there we go. There we go. We have audio now. Okay, I'm very sorry. 631-632-9872 is our phone number. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing?
Okay, how are you? And I think we lost audio again.
Oh, I hear you.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention to you before, you said there was no money going to the Katrina people. I remember you saying that the war was over, they were handing out money in Israel, was it? I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, well, didn't they hand out credit card vouchers and stuff to the refugees?
Are you talking about the Katrina refugees?
Didn't they hand out credit cards with loaded $3,000, $4,000 credit limits on them?
Well, if they did do that, I know they didn't do that for everybody, but that could be one of those urban legends that actually didn't quite happen like that. I know a lot of people did not get anything and just wound up either being forcibly relocated or just staying and living in abject poverty.
Understood. All right. All right, I'll listen to the rest of the show off air. Thanks for being there. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks for calling. And again, sorry for all the craziness here. We really have to smack some people around to get things working here. Sorry. Let's take another call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Manuel. It's Brill from Newcastle upon Tyne.
Hi, how are you?
First person on tonight, but I got cut off.
I'm sorry about that. I touched the wrong part of the phone, and apparently that's a no-no. So what's on your mind?
I'm just ringing up in connection with something our local council are doing over in the UK.
Okay.
What they're doing is they're putting RFID chips on our garbage bins.
Mm-hmm.
They're what we call wheelie bins over in Newcastle. These RFID tags, they're basically there to, it's like a unique serial number which is scanned when the bin is tipped into a refuse lorry.
I think we talked about this on Off the Hook last week. But wasn't that in Australia? It's happening over there, too?
Up in the UK as well.
Oh, yeah. Great. We lost you again. I'm sorry. Say that again?
I think there's about 500,000 being put out so far. It's been done by a German company over here.
Uh-huh.
But they're basically wanting to... what they're going to be doing, I'm fairly certain, is going to be charging residents for the weight of the rubbish they're collecting, which is ultimately going to... You know, it's going to result in a lot of people tipping the rubbish just out in the countryside. And
yeah, I imagine so. If people are going to get charged by the weight, yeah, they're just going to dump it onto the street or something.
Yeah. So, I mean, I haven't actually got one in my bin as of yet, but quite a few people have.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm planning on doing, because, like I say, it contains unique information about the household.
Oh, great. We lost them again. I am tempted to just turn the microphone off and walk away from this place at this point. This is insane. The phone has completely gone dead again. The wires are all loose, not connected properly. I think it's a disservice for me to continue to try and take calls because this keeps happening all the time. All right. I guess the best thing I can do is just try and hobble along as best I can. Maybe I should hit something really hard. Like my head. All right. Again, sorry for that person calling from overseas, being cut off twice. Well, we seem to have audio now. The thing is, I wasn't even touching anything. I was away from... Things are disconnecting themselves. All right, let's try this one over here. I'm going to touch it very lightly. And good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, it's me again. Listen, I just realized that it's raining really bad out here. You probably have copper coming into the building. You probably don't have fiber anywhere. So if the manhole gets full of water, you're going to get dumped.
I don't think that's what's happening here. I think these are wires right in front of me that aren't connected properly because when I touch them, they do something. And when I, you know, sometimes they do something on their own, that's true. But I know what phone interference sounds like, and I don't think that's what's happening here.
Oh, all right.
Yeah.
That's what I'd ask.
All right, but thanks for trying to help us troubleshoot this.
Problem.
All right, take care. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
It's Brill again.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I'm staying far away from the phone. Not going to touch anything. And let's see if nothing moves, maybe you'll stay on.
So what I was just wanting to finish saying was,
the RFID tags, they obviously contain unique information with regards to the household. So when the RFID tags appear on my bin, what I'm planning on doing is taking it off the bin, sending it back to our local council anonymously, and then see if I get any comeback from it. Because I suppose it would be I'm tampering with somebody else's property, but what the hell.
Well, now, are you able to see the RFID tags?
Yeah.
How big are they?
They are supposed to be put right under the front lip of the bin.
Mm-hmm.
So they should be quite easy to spot, although they are small.
And are they easy to remove?
As far as I know, yeah.
So you could easily just swap them around and everybody gets a different one? And
well, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the trouble with local councils and stuff. You know, they're pouring so much money into this. I've heard rumours of the costs being in the millions. And the thing is, they haven't actually told anybody about it. They've done this completely behind everybody's backs. They've not been open about it at all.
Mm-hmm.
To wonder what the purpose of it actually is, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you know, these things, when they put them into place, they generally don't remove them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, they're building towards something, some kind of monitoring system where they know exactly what you're consuming, what you're throwing out, and what you're buying. And once that's in place, people are going to say, well, hey, that's always the way it's been. I guess that's the normal order of things.
And then where do they go from there? What next?
Yeah, well, I guess we can give them some ideas, or we can try and screw the system up as well as we possibly can. And I think questioning it is certainly one good way to do that.
Yeah. Well, that's enough from Bin Brother this week. So
Bin Brother, that's good. That's good.
I'll no doubt be listening to you tomorrow night on Off the Hook.
Okay, that's the show where we're able to keep connected to the phone.
Yes.
So I'll talk to you then, hopefully.
Excellent.
Take care.
Hope the great work.
631-632-9872, and I realize I probably scared everybody away because of all the doom and gloom that's going on here, but that call went off without a hitch. I stayed 2 feet away from the phone, didn't go up or down, move or anything like that, and didn't adjust any levels, so nothing got disconnected that time. I don't know if that'll hold up, but it's certainly worth a try. We'd like to hear from people in the Gulf region, if anybody out there is listening live. But again, regardless of where you are, if you're in the United States, please try and see that documentary tonight on HBO about what has taken place in New Orleans over the last year, because it's the biggest catastrophe, I think, to ever hit this country. Natural catastrophe, that is, as far as I guess 9/11 probably ranks above that, but as far as a natural disaster, in so much as Katrina was a natural disaster, aided by human incompetence, there is nothing to equal this. Nothing at all. 631-632-WUSB. Let's take a look at some listener mail, because that's always fun to do. And, of course, you can write to us, otw@2600.com. And that works. That part of the show always works. So if you write to us, we will get it. Dear Off the Wall, a caller during a show a couple of weeks ago said he was thinking about leaving America because things over there have become progressively worse over time. The first thing I would like to say about this is that after listening to a lot of brain damage shows myself, that's the program I used to do back in the 80s and 90s, I agree it's getting worse. It's always the same issues over and over again, but they get far worse each time. How the anti-flag burning law has not been passed yet is beyond comprehension. They've been trying for so long, getting stronger and stronger each time they try. It can't be that far away. If Bush would have been on the ball and had tried to pass that law days after 9/11, he would have gotten it through with ease. However, I don't believe that running away is the answer. In fact, I, as a British citizen, want to do the opposite. I see America as a big ship that's steaming towards a very big iceberg, Titanic style, and Europe and the rest of the world is a series of tugboats being pulled along behind. One goes down, they all go down. Okay, that's interesting. So what, you want to get on board the Titanic? Yeah, I guess there's room for one more. So if we're a bit pessimistic for a second, where would you sooner be? On the ship that was going to be pulled down? Or the ship where, when the day comes, you can be part of the force that will be wrestling for control of the helm? in what will hopefully be an attempt to steer us away from the big iceberg. You know, no offense here, but I really think that's not a very good analogy. I really think you can come up with a much better one than that. You're a tugboat behind the Titanic, we're the Titanic, and we're in a better position? I don't know. I see us as, if we're the Titanic, I'd want to get off. I'd want to swim around the ocean and take my chances. Where's the ocean? What countries represent the ocean? Anyway, that's the way I see it. And that's why all my future plans involve me moving to America, which in itself is not an easy thing. America is not exactly the most welcoming country in the world, unless you can afford to invest in a company that employs 8 or more Americans, in which case you are welcomed in with open arms. Is that all it takes? Okay. On the recent terror events, I'm in the same boat as you. Whenever I hear about the latest plot, I just don't believe it. In fact, before I turn on the TV, I normally say something like, let's see who blew up what this morning. And last week I was correct. I correctly guessed a plane was involved. It was bound to happen after all midterm elections are coming up. They need to re-inject the fear. Very true. I find it worrying and an interesting insight that the day before this happened, John Reed said of the British people, they just don't get it when it comes to why they need to remove all our rights because of terrorism. And then, of course, we wake up the next morning, and boy, do we get it now. The fact that they have been caught dumping liquids into a common bin just proves that this has nothing to do with liquids. It's all about preparing us for the loss of our rights. You're referring to people in airports taking your banned suspicious liquids and dumping them into a common bin where God knows what they could do. Even non-suspicious liquids could do something mixed together like that. Here again are John Reed's comments on the 16th of August. It's deeply regretful if someone loses their baggage. It's far more regretful if they lose their life. It's terrible if somebody is delayed, but a delay is more acceptable than death. Why don't we use that for everything? We just parallel it to death and compare it. Oh, yeah, I did rob the liquor store, but it's better than blowing up the liquor store and killing everybody. Don't you think that stealing something is infinitely better than mass murder? All right, then. You can use the logic for any situation you choose. Anyway, continuing with this letter here. I couldn't help but shout at the screen when I heard this. More about shouting at screens. Yes, I know. Much as I would shout at him if the guy was right in front of me. This guy is a Class A moron who needs to be removed from power now. But what he did do is form the new template for removing our rights and getting away with it. It's deeply regretful if someone loses their insert right here. It's far more regretful if they lose their life. It's terrible if somebody is insert illegal treatment here. But a insert illegal treatment here is more acceptable than death, presuming that the illegal treatment is indeed not death in the first place. I would love to promise to call into the show sometime, but I have several hours, if not days, of uncontrollable ranting built up inside me, which would explode if given the chance, and I'm sure the FCC would find a problem with that. So for now, I will stick to the medium of email. Of course, this is probably what they want me to do, and I'm just playing right into their arms. Anyway, that's enough of my views. Time to give the microphone to someone else's views. Keep up the good work. Thanks for giving us all a voice. We certainly don't have this voice in the UK. Signed, Zen. Thanks very much for writing in. Seems to be getting most of our listeners from the UK tonight. I was doing some shouting at the TV set just yesterday, in fact. Doing a lot of that lately. They had, get this, they had the son of the Shah of Iran being interviewed on television. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Shah of Iran was the dictatorial leader of Iran that was put into power by the United States and was driven from power by mobs of religious zealots in 1979. And that's how Iran got to be the crazy place it is now, filled with religious zealots running everything, because they were so enraged by this guy who was basically keeping them from expressing themselves religiously or any other way, and oppressing them in all manners imaginable. So what happens when you do that? What happens when you have a dictatorial leader? Somebody gets pissed off and overthrows him eventually, and they're not always the nice guys that do it. And that's what happened in 1979 in Iran. I remember back then seeing this whole thing unfold. And back then there was hope that getting rid of the Shah would be the answer. And, yeah, that was the answer, getting rid of that guy, but certainly the people that replaced him were not really any better. But the whole thing can still be traced to bad foreign policy on our part. How dare we put somebody in charge of a country who has no right to be in charge of that country in the first place? So anyway, they're interviewing the guy's son, who's now all grown up and talking about how that regime needs to be changed, and no doubt with him at the helm. This guy has been in the United States, has been trained by the U.S. Air Force, I believe. It's incredible. We just keep doing the same things over and over again. And, yeah, sure, there needs to be some kind of change over there. But didn't the guy that everybody is saying is out of his mind over there, the president, whose name I still have not learned how to pronounce, didn't they elect him? Wasn't he an elected president? Isn't that the result of people reacting against what the United States is doing and electing somebody who's going to stand up to us? But no, apparently they elect the wrong people, and that doesn't count. Didn't count in the Palestinian territories, doesn't count in Iran. And so the question asked to this guy was, if your father had not been deposed and you were in charge now, how would things be different? And, of course, he launched into this whole thing about how things would be so much better. And both the interviewer and this Nimrod missed the point. If your father had not been deposed and if you were in charge, what does that say? That says there were no free elections at all, ever. The assumption is this guy is the Shah's son, so therefore, yeah, obviously, he would be in power. No question, no voting, no democracy at all. So how would things be under your power, under your control? Oh, they'd be great. They'd be peachy. People would have the right to do all sorts of things except vote. And they totally missed that. And boy, I was shouting at the screen for quite some time after that. Okay. Looks like we're out of time, almost out of time. And I don't want to take my chances with the phone again. I'm really sorry for all the technical snafus. I'm sorry for yelling at the phone, yelling at the board, yelling at the microphone, and everything like that. And hopefully in this particular case, this can be sort of maybe a microcosm of what we have to do nationally. You have to get angry. You have to raise your voice. You have to do something. You have to pound your fist on the table. And, okay, I probably broke a lot of things just by doing that. I'm sorry. But sometimes you need to shake things up in order to affect change. And I think that's what needs to be done on so many levels here. Now, one very good way for you to get started and for you to feel that anger and rage and sadness and desire to do something is to turn on a documentary tonight. And I don't usually promote something this much, but boy, it really hit me pretty hard, and I think it will hit anybody who sees it pretty hard. When the Levees Broke, the Spike Lee film, 4 hours on HBO tonight, starting at 8, and I'm sure it'll be repeated a million times too. I'd like to hear some reactions to it. Email us otw@2600.com. Or listen to Off the Wall next week, and hopefully we'll get the chance to talk on the phone about it. I'd like to go out with the song that documentary goes out with. I can't think of anything more perfect than a song about New Orleans from Fats Domino, a resident of New Orleans who made it through the hurricane. Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Wall. We'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Al Collins. When I'm out in Stony Brook, I'll be listening to WUSB FM station. When I want to listen to some good blues, that's the station you tune into.